to begin taping the Siblings Without Rivalry. I'm Catherine Bosch, and we'll do a session on Siblings Without Rivalry today. I work as a family life educator, and most of my time is really spent doing parenting programs. And I am the mother of two daughters who are now adults. And I grew up as the youngest in a family of four, so I have some experience of being within sibling rivalry and having to deal with sibling rivalry, and that's certainly an issue that lots and lots and lots of parents bring up, whether it's parents of preschoolers, parents of school-age kids, or parents of teens. And I remember being very surprised in a parents of teens class that I was doing, where about session 7 of 9, one mother said, "I'm a single parent and I cannot have a meal with my two kids." And her two kids were something like ages 12 and 14. And they just would be so outraged at each other that they would have to eat in two separate rooms. She said, "I don't know, remember the last time I've had a meal with both children, both sons together. How do you deal with sibling rivalry?" Well, let's just take, let's look at a couple things. Here's one, it's called Universal Truths on Parenting. Truth number one is, one child is not enough, but two is way too many. Truth number two, babies are adorable, but they do grow up. Truth number three, you can't live with children, and you can't live without them. How do you like those universal truths? And for those of us in the role or whatever, active or inactive role of parenting that we're in, I like this one of Arlo and Janice. And Janice is saying to their son Bradley, "What is wrong with you lately?" He's looking up at her. She continues, "You have to argue with everything I say." She turns away and she says, "You make parenting very difficult." And he says back to her, "Childing isn't so hot either." Well, and here's another one that gets father into the picture. Here it's from For Better, For Worse by Lynn Johnston. And Michael and Lizzie are both younger kids now. They're both teenagers now. But Lizzie evidently takes some of his Tinker Toys, and Michael runs and says, "Give me that, Elizabeth." And she says, "No. It's mine," she says, and she pulls away. And he says, "It's mine," and she says, "It's mine," and he says, "It's mine," and she says, "It's mine." Finally, Ellie says, "John," to her husband, "don't just sit there, do something with those two. I'm busy up here and can't be expected to do everything." He's reading the paper and he looks sort of sheepishly over his glasses. So the next thing you see, they're down here, and dad's got one child on each knee and a book in front. And Michael says, "I get to choose the story first." And Lizzie says, "No, me." And then mother yells from upstairs, "John, when you're done there, I need a new shelf made for the laundry room. Do you hear me, honey? And the sink still leaks." Lizzie says, "More stories, Daddy. Want more stories?" Dad says, "I believe this is why primitive man started to hunt." Get things going between the kids, and then you get some demands from mom inside of it, and you're really all very mixed up. Well, sibling rivalry, it's inevitable. Now why, and that's been said by all sorts of child developmental people, why is sibling rivalry inevitable? Any ideas? Why do kids rival each other? Why are kids jealous of each other?
They're learning about power and their own power.
They're learning about power and also what kind of power they have. Okay, what else?
Simple economics, unlimited wants and desires and very limited parental resources.
Yeah, if I have somebody else who wants some of these same things, there may not be enough to go around. And what might be one of those main things that kids think of? There could be a couple of them that may not be enough of to go around.
Dessert.
Dessert's fun, especially with ice cream.
Who gets to sit by the window?
Yeah.
Or a favorite seat. There's always some favorite seat.
Especially whether it's the front seat of the car or the special, or by the special seat by the television. What else might there not be enough of to go around? It's probably the beginning one. That love and the time, attention time. How many of you in a second, when you brought your second child, how many have second, at least two children? Okay. That when that second child comes along, that the first one, depending upon how old they were, or somewhere along the way, finally said, send the other one back. Get rid of them. Let them go back to where they came from. And it probably happened when? Just after the first day. Maybe the first day, yeah. Okay. And you were spending a lot, not only tired yourself, but spending a lot of time with your baby, which you can't do anything on.
Well, my children are adopted, and when our daughter came, she was from Korea, and she came in on the airplane. We didn't get out of the airport, and he told us to leave her there.
Just spent too much time waiting around, and it wasn't fun, it was boring. And all the excitement aimed at somebody else, and there's not going to be enough left over for me. Okay, so perhaps because of that infinite amount of wants and finite amount of time, love, that's at least what we think about, kids are going to come up with the equation that there's not going to be as much left for me as there used to be before. And so, I'll miss out on something. So sibling rivalry is going to be there, but how can we, can you think of any, so that's the negative side of sibling rivalry, the feeling that we're just not going to get our needs met, our wants met. It's not going to be enough to go around. Can you think of any, let me go on this side, can you think of any good things about sibling rivalry? Any positive aspects about sibling rivalry?
Well, it teaches the necessary skills for adulthood.
But. Yeah. Can you say any more about that? You're on the right track. What might be some of these skills? Anyone help her? What might be? It does.
Negotiation.
Okay, it does teach some basic skills for adulthood, such as one might be negotiation. How to take two demands and come up with one that can be agreed upon. Anything else?
Compromise.
Compromise, okay. Negotiation and compromise, giving and taking a little bit, and not always demanding, I'm going to get what I want when I want it, when I want it.
Probably knocks a little of the selfishness out of a person.
Okay. To recognize that there are other people around that have needs as well. So it probably rubs off a little bit of that me only.
Okay. There's a line in there somewhere, though. There's sibling rivalry, and then there's sibling rivalry.
Yeah,
and sometimes that gets very ugly and never goes away. I deal with a lot of people in the parish who are still estranged from their siblings decades. Later, Pentecost Walt would then.
And they may not even be able to remember the specific situation. They've got some ideas that have grown and become gigantic. Some things or other, but they may not remember the specific.
And it might be circumstantial. My wife comes from a family of seven children, and they grew up in one small house, and not only did she have to share a bedroom with her next oldest sister for 18 years, she had to share a bed with her sister for 18 years. That's tough. Mm-hmm. That's tough to do. You really don't get a, you know.
Yeah. I grew up on a farm, the youngest of four, and my next older sister was three. The next oldest was a sister who was 3.5 years older. And we shared a bedroom and a bed. And I can remember there were a couple of times we each end up with a fingernail fight over something or other. But basically, we've gotten along pretty well. I mean, there was always, for some reason, there would be some real rivalry, and then we would be advocates for each other. Love and hate are very common emotions for siblings, and how we can help them to recognize without denying, saying, oh no, you don't really hate your, if the child says, I hate so-and-so, oh no, you don't hate, or you shouldn't hate, or that's a terrible thing to say. what might be more helpful at that time is to allow recognition that, yeah, some things really bug you, and this is one of them that you're really outraged about, and you don't feel very loving right now. And help them to work through it.
I find the fastest way for me to get my children out of this battle with each other, and this, I don't intentionally do this, but they can be absolutely at each other's throats. And if I come down on one of them, the other one immediately steps in to comfort that person. So maybe that helps them to see that even in when they're angry at each other, they still care for each other. I don't know.
And maybe even that's a time to be able to give them some encouragement to say, hey, you really supported each other in that issue, even if it was against, without saying, even if it was against me. But there are times you really do get along and support each other and really build the other person up, and I admire that. And good to see that. Okay. Adele Faber and Elaine Maslisch have written a neat little book that's called Siblings Without Rivalry. And they're also the authors of the book Talking So Kids Will Listen and Listening So Kids Will Talk. The Siblings Without Rivalry is really a very good book. It's been out, I don't know, 5-6 years or more. And when I knew it was coming out, I went to a bookstore and said, do you have Siblings Without Rivalry? And the clerk looked up at me and said, no, but I sure wish I, no, siblings, she looked up at me and said, no, but I sure wish I did. And I said, and I realized she was not thinking in terms of the book. And I said, I mean the book by Faber and Maslisch. And she said, is there one written? If there isn't, there ought to be. And I said, there is, but have you gotten it in? And she said, no, but I'll certainly look for it. And it's a neat little book, and she comes up with a couple of basic skills. And one of the exercises she has people go through is to have them identify, and let me put you in this situation for a little while. You have a partner, and because we have both males and females in here, we'll just use the general term of partner. You are married, you've got this partner, you've been together with this partner, for a while, and things are really going very well, and all of a sudden one day your partner comes and says, honey, I love you so much, I've decided to get another one just like you. How would you feel?
Pretty good.
They're going to do the dishes and food or whatever it is, yeah. What would be some of those feelings? Over my dead body. Okay. And so that new partner comes in, and the new partner is pretty cute and really quite charming and quite captivating. And when you all go out together, the menage a trois, people say hello, smile at you, and then they look at this new partner and say, oh, isn't that new partner sweet, just so adorable, oh, how are you? And then they look at you and say, don't you like the new partner? What are you going to say?
No.
No. Get rid of it. Send that person back. And then one day you come and realize that this new partner is wearing some of your clothes. Just magically appear on the new partner. And you run complaining to your partner, the first partner, and you say, but those are mine! And your partner, for all things, saying, well, they've just been sitting in your closet. Besides that, you've gained a little bit of weight, and they don't fit you so well anymore. And look at how well they fit so-and-so. What are you going to feel like? You really haven't used them for a long while anyway. Why are you so stingy? Why don't you share? Why do you have to be such a complainer? How do you want to feel? What do you want to respond? We're speechless. I want them back, right? They're mine! Sharing is a hard thing, and there's a lot of things we as adults don't like to share, and there are some things that kids don't like to share. Another might be that you've gotten a special toy. Let's just say you've gotten a new computer. And you've just struggled and learned, finally learned how to operate it. And all of a sudden, a new partner comes in and says, "Oh, can I play with that? I think I know how it works." What are you going to want to say? No way. So you say, "No, you can't." And the new partner goes running out crying. And pretty soon, the other gender partner comes in and says, "Oh, what's the matter with you? Can't you ever share? Just give the new partner a chance to try this. Don't be such a pig, such a fill in the blank." How are you going to feel? Well, not exactly like sharing with that new partner. You've been put down, you've been called names, you've been compared, you've been ridiculed, you've had some of your privileges taken away, and we're not going to feel very happy about this new interloper. Well, whether the number one child in the family feels some of these things when number two child comes in, I would suppose the answer is more likely yes than it is no. I think it may be a rare situation that the first child is so excited and so happy all the time at having another. How many of you decided, maybe this isn't even a fair question to answer, to ask, so maybe it's a redundant question that doesn't require an answer. How many of you decided to really have a second child mainly to provide companionship for the first? But you want to sort of create friends. And then, so you have some expectations, right? What might those expectations be?
That they
get along. What else? What other expectations might we have?
So they learn to share.
They'd learn something, and one of those things might be about sharing with each other. What other expectations do we have?
They would keep each other occupied.
And therefore give you a little bit more freedom.
Secondary babysitting, yeah.
And the problem is if we decide to have that second child and the first one's only a year and a half, there's not a lot of secondary babysitting that 1.5-year-old or that sort of age span in between is going to allow. If you've got 5 years apart, I think it's quite a different story, but that seldom ever happens. And I think the information and research, I think I only know of two studies that have been done on the ideal age span between children. And the ideal age span that both of these studies came up with, and they're studies that have been around since, I think one is the end of the 70s and one is in the early 80s. I don't know anything recent, and I'd be interested in hearing if somebody does. And both of those put that age span, ideal age span, as being about 2 years between the birth of one and the conception of the other. So that they're around 2 years, 9 months, you know, or right around 3 years between births and between the birthdays.
I can't cite a study, but I have read in more than one publication that the current thought seems to be 5 years is a more likely scenario because the child is out of the generational sphere of the first. That there's different agenda going on. You don't have two people learning to go to the toilet. You don't have two people doing the same kind of activities, playing with the same kind of toys at the same kind of physical level in the house. That 5 years or better is really kind of an okay thing, which has been proven in our particular family quite nicely.
And they also say if there's 5 years difference between children and the family, it's like a new family.
New family.
So if you've got a 10-year-old and a 5-year-old, and then you're expecting another, you really have three single children. Three only children. Each one is in their own family.
As a child care teacher, I taught this 3 years ideal age, and of course I planned 3 years, and I just have two kids that are at each other's throats all the time. So it certainly has more to do with personality.
Yeah, it may have something to do with personality and how they perceive what else is happening elsewhere in the situation, and how often we may use comparisons. One of the neat chapters in Faber Maslisch's book, Siblings Without Rivalry, is titled, and I like the title, and the chapter carries through on it very nicely. The title is, Not Until the Bad Feelings Come Out Can the Good Feelings Come In. And that's an important little title to remember, that if kids can be able to get out why they don't like what's going on, or what they feel is unfair, unjust, or whatever, the words are out, and then they're able to take something else in. But if we keep stuffing them up and putting that rag back in the mouth, saying, don't say that, don't think that, that's wrong, that's bad, whatever, they just keep it inside, and it builds and it ferments and it becomes lots worse.
Yeah. I think parents can be very proactive also in terms of not just allowing things to happen, but making things happen. When our fourth child was born, our first and second children were there to help deliver that baby.
Wow, and that's a new phenomenon that I think is very helpful.
Yeah, and they were 7 and 9 at the time, and it was remarkable. They actually helped bring out this child and wipe it off and place it on their mother. When we got home, they were doing things right from the beginning in terms of changing this child and bringing it to nursing and watching this and asking their mother questions about breastfeeding. And that made a very special relationship between those two. And there was enough space between them where that was able to happen.
5 and 7?
No, there were 7 and 9.
7 and 9.
And then, of course, we had number 3 was sort of in the middle. He was too young for that. And that's Eric, you see. But Katrina's been bonded to those two in a way that Eric never has been.
Yeah. And you get... another thing that they also say about children, not necessarily spacing, but with numbers, is that if you have 3 children, there's always one out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 2 that will team up together. And sometimes it's the older and the younger who team up, because there's a different kind of relationship. There's not so much that competition. If you have 4 children, then they'll often pair off together.
For fighting,
or supportive, or whatever. So one of the skills that's very helpful as we work in reducing, we probably will never be able to eliminate sibling rivalry, but we may use sibling rivalry in a positive sense to help children learn interaction skills, negotiation skills, mediating skills, getting along, understanding feelings, understanding give and take, understanding property ownership, that can help them in their later years in understanding how good people skills. So there's some positive things, but they'll be very negative unless we can get a couple of the points across as parents and help them to learn some of these. And one of those important points is that feelings are okay, feelings aren't right or wrong. And we can acknowledge child's feelings. Rather than judge them, we can acknowledge them. Rather than deny them, we can accept the feelings. We may not want to accept the behavior, but there's a difference between behavior and feelings. You can have these feelings, and you can then choose how you're going to act on those feelings. And some of those choices may be very helpful, and some of them may not be so helpful. And then they can learn, they may learn from the experiences of what might they choose differently next time. So we can look at acknowledging children's feelings rather than denying. So that we can be very permissive with children's feelings, but very clear and firm about the acceptable limits. So we can try to recognize when kids come at you with each one telling a different tale, instead of trying to figure out who's right and who's wrong, which puts you into the position of judge, jury, defending, and prosecuting attorney all in one. And I don't think any of us would like to be tried in that kind of a court with one person acting as all of these people. How can we get ourselves out of fault finding and get ourselves into, instead, helping them figure out what's going on? So in acknowledging feelings, you've got kids, well, let's come up with a basic situation. What brings rivalry? What's a situation that would bring rivalry to your kids, or where they begin to tell, they're fighting each other, they're at each other, what might be some of those situations?
Control of the TV set.
Yes.
Control of the TV set? Okay. What goes on?
Who's got the clicker?
Who's got it? And I want it. I want to get it from you.
And you had it yesterday, and you had it last
night. No, I didn't.
You got to watch your
No, I didn't. I didn't have it. I mean, isn't that part of it, too, where there's denying rightly or wrongly? I mean, truth doesn't really play a huge role in this. It's what's ever going to get me what I want at this time.
I know this sounds utterly simplistic, but we've solved about 80%+ of all of these kinds of things. The front seat, watching what on TV, sitting in what place at a restaurant with the odd even day system. One kid is permanently assigned throughout their lifetime as being an odd day, in our particular case, they happen to be born on opposite days, and one is an even day. And if it's an odd day, that person gets to, they make all those decisions.
But how do you do it with four?
We do it with four because there are two generations, they're 14 and 12 and 7 and 5.
Okay.
So, you know, we have the two odds and we have the two evens, and they're not usually in the same kind of space. So, as I said, for most but not all, and if it's, you know, there's no discussion about it. We're walking to school, they want to walk the dog, and they both want to do that. The first question on our mind is today an odd day or an even day? It's an even day. They may not like it, but because it's utterly consistent, end of discussion. It's an odd day, you have nothing to say about it. But all day tomorrow, you have everything to say about it. Mm-hmm. It's really a neat system.
Okay. So that works very well if you've got the two generations or if you've just gotten two children.
Yeah. My kids would fight about July 31st.
Oh, yeah, we do that.
First.
Yeah, we do that. That happens too. But I can live with that 2 days out of 60.
Mm-hmm. So then you might, they may by then learn how to negotiate those extra days, the extra hours.
Well, they trade. But that's always between them.
Okay. So there's a solution to it. And how do we figure out some of these solutions? And part of it is, in a sense, modifying the environment, setting up beforehand, or removing beforehand, changing, scheduling, adding, subtracting, so that we can remove a good amount of these problems from happening before they even happen.
No, I would agree, yeah.
Yeah, so when a situation happens and they're at each other, like with the television set, and who's got the controls, my turn, no, it's not my turn, if you had it, they can go back and forth, Mom or Dad, and they want us to come in and make both of, each one wants to be right, and to get the parents' approval on that. And if we use this first skill to acknowledge child's feelings, what might we say to each child? The one says, it's my turn to have the remote control. So what do you say to that child that acknowledges the child's feelings?
And I understand that you're upset about not giving the remote control.
Yeah, it's my turn to have it. The other one says, no, it's my turn to have it because you had the extra program and you had it then. What do you say to the other one who says it's really their turn now? Remember, there's two kids. What do you say to the other one now?
Is there a way we can...
Well, what about the other one's feelings? You've acknowledged my feelings. What about her feelings?
You both really want the remote control.
Or you can even say that specifically to her, too.
Yeah.
And you feel it's your turn to have the control. Okay. So you put these two together. What's the kind of sum up between the two? What do you see as the problem?
Neither one wants to get in.
Now your statement can come up.
Well, what day is it?
Yeah, well, if we don't have the system of what day it is, what would be another way for those who don't have that system? You've got a solution to that already. So, you've acknowledged my feelings, we've acknowledged her feelings. Now, how do you put those together as you sum up what the problem is? What's the problem?
They both want something.
I can see, okay, how would you say it to the two of us?
Well, let's do a little bit of negotiation here.
Well, let's identify the problem, and then we'll come to your step. You hold yours for just a minute.
Okay.
I know you both want to be able to choose the TV show, but only one of you can do it right now.
Okay, so you're acknowledging what the problem is. You're putting the problem into words. Barbara Colarosa on her video would say, you know, if they're really scrapping about it, you're fighting. I mean, you might as well put words to the very obvious to let them know that you're in on what's happening. So you can say what's very obvious here, you're both really upset or you're both having a problem with who gets the turn of the, with the remote control. Now.
And then let's do some negotiation here.
Yeah, how do you suppose you can negotiate that to solve the problem? Now, is this, have we really been at each other's throats at this point yet? I mean, are we really ready to put a bloody nose? Is it life-threatening or morally threatening?
No, whining.
It's so if it's just whining and irritating, if it's just whining or irritating, and if you have given them any kind of skills beforehand about problem solving, your next step would say, it sounds like you've got a problem with both of you wanting to have the remote control. I'm sure the two of you can figure out a way that will be fair to both. Figured it out, come and tell me. I'll shut the television off and meanwhile. And then I might go to whatever I'm doing. And I take myself out, still as a neutral party. I haven't favored either one.
But you have the television, what do you call that?
Remote control.
You have
control. I might have the remote control in my hand.
Then let them negotiate.
And when they figure out a solution and it's acceptable to the two of them, it doesn't have to be acceptable to me, but as long as it's acceptable to the two of them and there's no bloodshed. if it's serious and fighting and it's life-threatening, you would do something else. But most of those things, as you said, are more irritating and annoying, and it's better to remove ourselves because I'm the irritated and annoyed parent here. And why do I make it a three-ring circus and put my feelings in there? I'm the adult. I can deal with my feelings on my own. I don't have to make them responsible for my feelings. I can deal with my feelings and give them responsibility for solving the problem. Say, I know you can do it. When you figured it out, come and tell me. As we acknowledge feelings, we don't put somebody's feelings as right and somebody else's feelings as wrong, and then I arbitrarily decide who's right and who's wrong, who's up and who's down, who's loved and who's not loved, which is probably the bottom line for the kids. In deciding, you know, does mom really love me best? Mom love you best. How many of you, whenever you were kids, ever asked your parent, who do you really love the best? What kind of answer did you get?
We love you both the same.
We love you, but did you feel good about it?
Heck no.
We knew it wasn't true. No matter what they said.
You know what I tell my kids? I tell each one of my kids, in the presence of the other, that I love them the best.
And then what do they say?
It's become a big family joke, so it really kind of takes the pressure off. Because I'm always looking at one or the other of them and saying,
you're my favorite.
And then the other three burst out laughing because I will say the same thing to them before the day is over.
Okay, and that's fair game as long as everybody knows that it's going on.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll find where there has been a parent who will tell each one, and don't you tell the other, and tell the next one, and don't you tell anybody
That's
else that this
whiskey.
Is their own special. And then you've got, because you don't know whether somebody's going to be blabbermouth and say, Mom, you told me, you know, last time we did it. Mom said, I was a baby.
Got like family circle.
Yeah. But when it's open, and it becomes a kind of family joke. Lynn Johnston has a neat little cartoon. She's done. I could do a whole series of a whole class on just her various cartoons through the years on sibling rivalry because she keeps coming back to it every now and then at different ages of her children. But this is one when Lizzie is probably about 8 years old and Michael must be about 11. And Lizzie comes up to Mom and says, Mom, who do you love the best, Michael or me? And Mom says, what every parent says, I love you both equally. But Lizzie isn't satisfied with that, like most of you aren't. And she said, no, but really, who's the bestest? And who do you really favor the asked, who's most important to you? And mother says, you're both equally challenging. Safe.
Yeah.
And Lizzie sort of snuggles up a little bit more and she says, but who does what you ask the most? Who behaves the best? You don't hear mother's answer. But the next thing you know, she's going past Michael and she says, she chose the dog. But that's very clever of mom in that situation to, you know, not get, but it's going to be very uncomfortable for kids. How many of you ever were told by your sibling or ever told your sibling that they were adopted? I never thought it happened with our kids. But our two daughters are very, very different. Our older daughter, who went after we named her, which is an old family name, everybody said we should have called her Paula instead of Anna because she was just the splitting image of my husband. Facial expression. And he was very blonde when he was little and she was very blonde. Our second daughter looks very much like me. She has, well, how I used to look. She has very dark, very natural color hair. Until much of her early teenage years through university, she always carried about 15 extra pounds around, which she's finally lost. But she was always a little rounder, and Anna was always very slim. I mean, she could eat endless. And you, when you give her a hug, you feel every bone in her body. And she has very straight blonde hair. Sarah has very curly, naturally curly, dark black hair. And it wasn't until they were in the same university together, Anna as fourth year student, Sarah as first year student, and Sarah decided she wanted to be in the same class that Anna was. Well, that's unusual for first and fourth year. The only thing she could figure out was that she would take the linguistics class that Anna was a TA for. So she, they're very, very different. They have their own uniqueness, unique qualities. She would come in always 1 or 2 minutes late with a pair of dripping wet. That was early morning class. Anna would have been there half an hour probably before the class began, getting things ready. And she'd always slide in next to her sister and say, what did I miss? And so when we went to Wesley for parents, and this was, we had just moved from the States into Canada that August. And they stayed in the States. And we went for parents' weekend, and we had a chance to meet Anna's mentor and advisor in linguistics. And we sat down for a cup of tea together, and he said, right off the bat, now there's one question I really want you to answer for me before we go any further. Which one of these is really adopted? And both my husband's and my mouths just sort of fell open. And he sort of repeated the question. And before we had a chance to respond to it, one of the daughters said to the other, and I forget which, well, I always told her she was the one that was adopted. And the other said, no, it had to be. I mean, they went back from, they had evidently talked about this as they were growing up, but we never knew this. And we did laugh because, you know, it wouldn't have mattered whether they were or were not adopted or if one was and one wasn't. You know, they're both our daughters. And so we've always smiled about that, where, you know, without us ever knowing, they were convincing each other that one was adopted. And that probably happens in a lot of families, without us ever knowing about it. One claiming to be having a special position, and the other being an interloper. You know, whether the parents do anything to start this, there's always these little, kids come with marvelous imaginations and they can build up stories that they want to believe to put them into a very more comfortable position. And that's part of sibling rivalry as well. And so how do we help kids how do we love our children uniquely rather than equally? To be able to say, you're the only dark-haired, naturally curly Sarah that we have in our family, and you're the only blonde Anna that we have in the family.
and you are special because you are you, and you are you. You have your own qualities. And that at this time you would enjoy this, but that may, you know, you may decide to enjoy some other things later on. And right now, you're really pretty good at this, and you may decide to add other things and change that and go on to something else. That's okay. You're special because you're you. So, finding ways to treat them uniquely. How about when they're little kids that you may have spent some time with them when you put them into bed to sort of settle them down and you read the book and you go through a little sequence. What happens when they start school and they get a little bit older? Then what happens to that ritual for time together? Do you find another way to put it in, that you can have time together to do something special with each other?
Or even more damaging, do you take it away from the older one and it remains or increases for the younger one, and the older one isn't getting the snuggles and the reading?
Yeah. And even when that younger one gets up to the age of where you turn it away from the older one, they still get it because they're the younger one. Now, why be such a... And we began to put labels on them.
I see that with my family, but it was the older one is a son, and he felt that this was too babyish for me to be going, or me or his father to be going upstairs and reading him a story and tucking him in. So he cut that off. But our daughter just clings to it. She's 11. She still wants half an hour of reading every night, and she's going to get it.
Yeah. And that may be okay, because there'll come a time when they won't want that time with you. They'll want it with someone else. And there was just... I was reading the newspaper last night, and it was the Minneapolis, I think it was the Minneapolis paper, talking about that births for unmarried teens are going down in all age ranges except the below 13, where it's increasing. And in one area that had increased 100%, there had been like 90 births below 13 and below last year, and this year there's like 180. And that the basic response, and of course this is always somewhat questionable as you look back, how did you decide to become pregnant, that may not always be accurate, but I wanted someone to love me. And so that time that you spend together with the child can say, you are important.
I just always feel badly that our son doesn't get it. We've got to find other ways to spend time with him, because he doesn't want us to read to him, obviously.
Sure, and that reading may not be anything that's special, but it may be some talking time. It may be taking that dog for a walk around the block, that last thing in the evening together, and that you can talk together. It may be going out for malt or ice cream or something. It may be those 5-10 minutes that you have in the car alone with that teen, that child, as you take the child from here to Boy Scouts or to practice or to whatever that you have to take them to, and you turn the radio down lower. Most often what kids will do, particularly teens do when they first come into the car, is what? As loud as can be so that they don't have to talk. Because talking to them is scary, because then they put their foot in the mouth and say something that they decided not to say. Or that somebody's going to catch up. What did you say about that? Oh, no, okay. And that they may have to talk a little bit more about. And you may just have to say, let's have some special time together. This is our time. Maybe keep the radio on lower, but let's have some talking time.
That can be tricky, but you can be really creative with that too. You can go on camping trips and don't take radios.
Yeah.
You can go to theme parks. Mm-hmm. You can come to Holden Village. I don't see much of my kids around Holden Village, but when they get to a certain age, they disappear. But on the other hand, since we don't let our kids bring in their Walkmans or their
Game Boys,
or their Game Gears, or mm-hmm. things like that, they have a good supply of books, and we play a lot of cribbage. We find time for conversation. I'm still reading to my daughters in their adolescence, but that's just us. Mm-hmm. But there, if a parent will invest into, when you have four kids like I do, it gets tough too. But if you will make a decision to invest some kind of strategy, you had a great list, so that each child feels that they're getting some time without any other sibling. That goes a long way.
Yeah, and you may be puzzled as to what is it that they would consider important enough time to want to spend with you. And what you might do is give them each a 3x5 card and say, write down what you would like to do with me or with Mom. What are things that you would be willing to do with one or the other of us that you would feel happy about? And then you get a better idea of what's going on with them. And it's not always my having to spend my energy thinking of what's going to satisfy them, which may or may not. So that gives us something to start conversation about. And you might, then you can build on from there and say, well, you know, I'm not sure I can really, I feel very comfortable with this, but how about if we did, you know, you may find some way to negotiate that would be satisfactory for both of you. It's not a voting issue, one vote against somebody else's, but you know, how can we change this around so we can both be happy? How can we come to a mutual decision of it? The other one of the helpful things as we treat children uniquely rather than equally is how do we avoid comparisons? Can you think of anything that you, how can I put it more clearly? We so often make comparisons. Why don't you keep your room clean like your sister does? Or why are you such a finicky eater? Your brother gobbles everything down. I cannot think of anything specifically that I could not say to one child that did not have to bring in a sibling. Anything that we really want to say, another way of putting that would be, anything we really want to say to our child, we can say to that child directly without having to compare with anyone else. Sibling or fill in the blank. Neighbors, relatives, cousins, next door kids, best friends of the kids, friends, the children of your friends who may not be the friends of your child. I mean, you may have friends who have a similar age child, but the two kids aren't friends together. We may want to point to this one as being goody little two-shoes, and that will only make them worse friends if they ever thought of being friends. How did you, can any of you remember having your own parents compare you with any other sibling?
That never happened.
Well, I used to feel really badly because my mother did that, and I was held up as the...
Were you the oldest?
I was the oldest girl, but for the younger girls, yeah. Oh, and I just felt so badly for them to have to hear that.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't put me in a good spot in relating to them.
Yeah, because what can often happen is that they gun that for you. I mean, they feel put down, and the revenge is not going to be against Mom, it's going to be against you being goody two-shoes.
Yeah, and they were much younger. Actually, they were foster sisters, but it just wasn't fair. And I did tell my mother that I thought it wasn't fair, but she didn't understand that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And probably did not think that when her own parent did that to her, she disliked it. But because it was done by her own parent, it's easy to pass it on down. Because we tend to parent off in the way we were parenting.
She was the eldest, so I'm not sure what those things happened.
And it was probably done to her. Now, she had to be, and she probably thought about it in a different, very different way than you did. She may have liked it and felt that you should feel honored to have to be this model. But it's hard to wear a heavy crown on your head all the time. It weighs you down. So we want to help avoid comparisons, and that anything we have to say to our child can be said to that child directly rather than bringing anybody else into the picture. Because most often, even if you compare yourself, do you ever compare yourself to somebody who really does things a lot poorer than you? You usually compare yourself to somebody who maybe does things way up there, but it's going to be hard for you to reach. And so comparisons are seldom ever helpful. One of the other things I should have put under number two is that we need to help children express, learn to express
feelings with words. And that can come really under helping children to acknowledge children's feelings. And then when there is a problem, and that may come with comparisons, it may come with feeling that they're not being treated equally and they have these feelings inside. And to, instead of taking them out by hitting, throwing, kicking, slamming, name-calling, to express them with words that describe. And that's very helpful, too. That, just put it in a different sense. To help them to use words that describe them. Now, we can use words to describe you're stinky, you're rotten, you're terrible, you're dumb, you're... I mean, that, it's not the, those aren't the kinds of descriptive words I mean. But to describe how you feel, describe what the problem is, what you need, or want, those are different. But that those descriptions can begin with I feel, I see, I don't like, I want, I need, rather than you're always such a, and a lot of labels. So that the next skills that might be very helpful to sort of reduce, and in a sense also teach something, is to set up that limit in your household of what is acceptable and what isn't. And that one of the basics would be no hurting with words or actions. In this house, we don't hit each other. In this house, we don't call each other names. In this house, we don't put each other down. Tell me, use your words to describe how you feel, what you need, how you see the problem, what you like, what you don't like. Take, in a sense, that's helping them to take ownership and helping them also get in touch with their own feelings so that it's not lost. And then to help, to intervene when fighting can't be ignored. And that's probably the basis. There's sometimes when we can just plain ignore the fighting, or we can say, you feel this and you feel that, and it sounds like you've got a problem, I'm sure you can solve it, and exit stage right. But there may be times when fighting sounds as if it's going to be hurtful, damaging either to a child or to some property, and you may need to intervene. And then you can follow a basic, and that's using again what we said earlier, to acknowledge they're angry. I can hear how outraged you are when so-and-so read your letter. To acknowledge what that anger might be. To state each other's point of view. You felt that looked like an interesting letter and you decided to open it up. What really happened? To state it in facts. To describe the problem with respect. Well, we need to be able to respect each one's property and privacy. But I'm sure you can figure out how you're going to prevent that from happening again. And it's going back to what we did a little earlier, and then leave the room. Now, if it sounds like it's going to be bloody, you might need to divide them first and say, I can see how outraged you are about this, and I see how you feel justified about this. We've got a problem with somebody making some decisions about privacy that we can't solve right now, so you can find a place there, and you can find a place there until you're ready to talk about it. And to figure out how you can prevent that from happening again. So you may need to separate them quickly. Got little kids hitting, one kid hitting the other with a truck. To take away the truck and say, I can see you're really angry, such and such, because of it. But trucks aren't, people aren't for hitting. Trucks are not to be used to hit somebody else. We're going to have to calm down a bit until we can talk about how we use the trucks, and I'll take the truck. So it's not going to run, so you're going to run up and take one last swipe with it. So, how do we help children to feel okay enough about themselves that they don't always have to be putting somebody else down in order to put themselves up? So perhaps if we can catch them doing things that are helpful, instead of only pointing fingers at them and stopping them when they're doing things that are not helpful, then they recognize that if they really want my attention, the time to get it is by doing something that I know is okay. How many of you really pay as much attention with your kids when they're working together nicely?
Positive reinforcement.
Positive reinforcement. That's one of the helpful phrases. If we want to look at some important words in parenting, one is to describe, handy-dandy, all-purpose word of describe how you feel, what you need, what you see, what you like, what you don't like, what needs to be done. Positive reinforcement, hey, thanks for helping. Yeah, it looks like you're having a good time. I'm glad you're enjoying that book together. And you really enjoyed that television program. You both managed to do very well in watching that program together. Oh, look at the game. Look how long you spent at that game. And look at how you put it all away. Wow. All the blocks are the problem. Now, there might be 10 other things still out, but you can still focus on the one thing that they did get. I see how well you did that. Now, I wonder which of the next ones should we start on? Should it be this or should it be this? In a sense, giving them a choice to decide what's next. Rather than, do you call that cleaned up? I mean, maybe they did spend a lot of time playing, but can we acknowledge what is done that's okay?
And reward.
Yeah, reward. Even just in words. To recognize in words rather than having to give out M&Ms or give out a prize or give out gold stars, to just say, hey, I like the way that looks. I knew you could do it. And last comments about siblings of our world. A couple more minutes. Other comments?
Yeah. I would probably only say that probably living in a larger family, that within my growing up, more or less larger family, although the rivalry would be there, you know, for that one-upmanship, mm-hmm. with the larger group, they end up, it was a matter of getting along. If not, there's the whole battle, there's about, the battle would be just...
it's just plain down to...
It's a matter of survival.
Survival is the bottom word on that, yeah. And now when we have smaller families, four might be considered a large family rather than 10 or 12 or whatever. Yeah. And still, whatever that size, anything above one, whether it's two children on up to 20 kids or more, you know, we still have to find a way to support and encourage each person. Now, if you choose to have 20, then you may also hopefully choose to have some, recognize how much time you've got to spend with each of those so that you can support and help them to develop and encourage and build their own self-esteem and feeling of I'm okayness. It's sometimes helpful if there's any amount of sibling rivalry with which you feel uncomfortable to keep a journal. Keep a little record, keep a little notepad that you probably keep in your pocket or on a shelf in the cupboard. And just be aware, without interfering or interacting, be aware of when kids are fighting with each other. Is there a time of day that this happens more likely? Where? Does it happen more often here than it does over there? Does it happen more often to the television than it does as they play out in the backyard or whatever?
is there a place, is there a particular issue? Is it over a bicycle? Is it over the television? Is it over clothes? Is it over food? Whatever that happens to be. Just keep a record for a couple of days. Two things might happen. You'll tune into whether they're doing it to get you involved or doing it because there's really somebody's unfair to the other person, or somebody is trying to control the other person. You'll also be able to tell if there's a time of day. Is it low blood sugar time? Is it a time when they need a non-sweet snack? I mean, just because they're tired out and they're at a low energy level. Is it when they come home from school and one really has a bad time with other kids at school, and it's easier to take it out at home than on their friends at school who might not be their friends any longer? So you can begin to understand, and it's how much does it involve of you? If you do more exiting after you acknowledge their feelings and acknowledge that you know that they can handle it, give them that confidence that you can come up with a fair solution, fair to both of you. If they don't have any problem-solving skills, help them come up with some basic problem-solving skills of what is the real problem, what do I need, what do you need, what are some ways of solving those needs, brainstorm possibilities. And then, you know, with this, to then evaluate those possibilities, will this work or will that work? And then to choose, and then decide how am I going to put it into, how are we going to make it work? How will we know we've been successful? Some basic problem skills. And give them a hug as often as you can to say, you're okay. And you won't have to fight so much to get it, to get that approval from them. Last comments, questions about self-esteem? Come on.